right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about horror film Come True, which actually came out last month, but I thought it was an interesting one. It would make for a good conversation. So Josh Bell from Awesome Movie Year is back with us to talk about some puzzle pieces for this one. You can check this movie out on IFC, and it is definitely a movie worth checking out, I think. This is one of the more unique, interesting horror films I've seen this year. And as we talk about, I've seen a lot of horror films this year. So, yeah, go check that out. And that conversation is coming up in a second. But before we get to it, I want to remind you guys, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you listen to podcasts. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget, if you enjoy the show, share it. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Get in touch with me if you ever want to join me for a future episode. I'm always looking for new co-hosts for all these movies we're trying to cover. And we got a Patreon, so check out the Patreon, produced by David Rosen, where I combine bonus content from my music career, Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and whatever else I'm involved with. Whatever I got bonus content for, it's going up on there, patreon.com/bydavidrosen. And the more people we get signed up, the more content I'm going to create for it. So check that out. So with all that said, let's talk about Come True. All right, Josh Bell is back with us for another horror movie. Josh, you've been on a lot of horror movie episodes, haven't you, lately?
I guess that I have. I mean, I like horror movies, but and I know you don't really like horror movies, but I guess you keep watching them and then tell me about it, and then we talk about them.
We're living through some strange times, and I don't know. There's a lot of good ones, and I enjoyed this one. We're going to talk about Come True, and I know I saw your review on this. I know you enjoyed this movie. Was this a movie that was big on your radar, like on the way? Because I know this Anthony Scott Burns had a movie a couple years ago.
Yeah, he did. I didn't see that movie.
Okay,
and this wasn't on my radar anymore than I just was looking at what was coming out in that month. And sure. I mean, it's an IFC Films release, and that's, you know, usually a sign of some level of quality. In fact, the last horror movie that we talked about on this podcast was also from IFC. So, I mean, that made me kind of take a look and say, okay, this is something that could be worth covering. But I didn't really know much about it other than that. I pitched it along with various other movies that were coming out that month to potentially review at CBR, and got the go ahead. And so I checked it out, but I'd be curious to see his first film now after having seen this, because this was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't on my radar either, but then I did see a couple of places. I saw that the still of the main star, Julia Sarah Stone, with the one eye patch, and that's a pretty cool image, and it certainly had been kind of in the back of my mind, and then I saw your review, and I was like, oh, I guess I gotta check this one out. Sounds pretty interesting and weird, and I will say, before we start getting into puzzle pieces, have you ever done a sleep study, Josh?
No, I have not. Although I have, like, I probably every single person have not been sleeping that well in the past year. Sure. So I had thought I might need to, but my doctor told me it didn't seem necessary. So thankfully, I will not have waking nightmares that attack other people. But have you?
Damn. Oh yeah, I've had it three times now, and wow. It's not fun. It is very creepy, and I like the sci-fi version of that in this movie. I just thought it was a good entry point into this movie. I could relate to it a little bit, shall we say?
Wow, okay.
Much like our last horror movie we talked about, I could relate to it a little
true.
Bit.
That's true, yeah. See, that's why Dave's watching horror movies, because they all relate to his life.
That's right, that's when it works.
The horror movie about podcasting, and the horror movie about comedy rap are on the horizon, and, you know, we'll complete this whole Dave Rosen horror oeuvre.
Well, you know, the podcasting one has to happen sooner or later, so.
I mean, there have definitely been, I've seen at least one horror movie about podcasters who, you know, people who do a podcast about, like, urban legends or something like that, and they go look for I can't remember. I seriously have seen this movie, and it was
It was Halloween. It was the Halloween reboot from a couple years ago.
That's true. There's that. Yeah. That's just kind of like an entry point, I guess. But I definitely saw one movie where the main characters are podcasters.
Oh, wow.
And they go to some like haunted woods to do a podcast about it, and then they get murdered.
Might have to cover that one of these days. Well,
yeah.
Maybe not.
Not recommended. But I'm sure there are others.
So let's start getting into some puzzle pieces for Come True. What do you got for your first piece?
Well, starting with horror, my first puzzle piece is A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors, which weirdly, I feel like I've talked about on this podcast at least once, not that long ago. Of course, the whole Nightmare on Elm Street series, I would think has to be an influence on this, even though the tone is very different, but just the idea of horrors from our dreams come either, you know, coming out of our dreams into reality, or being in a dream and experiencing danger or horror or whatever that, you know, can harm us for real. Mm-hmm. And I picked that one in particular because the characters aren't in a sleep study, but they are in like a clinic. There are these, the main characters are these troubled teenagers who have various issues related to drugs or to living on the streets or things like that, acting out. And so they're all being supervised by maybe not the most ethical of medical professionals,
mm-hmm.
As well as, of course, Nancy, played by Heather Langenkamp from the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie, who is more sympathetic to them and believes them. They all say, oh, Freddy's coming into our dreams, and no one believes them. And it's kind of in a weird way like this, where we've got this the weird shadow figure guy who's in everyone's dreams, and at first it doesn't seem believable. So, and that's another movie where the characters are able to kind of use the dream world to fight back against Freddy. That's the whole idea of that movie, is that they can then take charge, and because they're in their dreams, they can do things that they couldn't do in real life. And I think there's a bit of that here. So, I mean, obviously a lot cheesier and a lot more of a sort of mainstream horror. But that was the first thing that I thought of kind of watching this movie.
Yeah, actually, I was also thinking of it as well, and not to a specific entry in the series like you brought up part three, but more so this almost in a way feels like it could have been like a spec script for bringing Nightmare on Elm Street into the current like A24 neon horror, you know, trend that's going on right now. But yeah, just like that very like down and dirty, kind of stripped down, like quote unquote realistic kind of horror that seems to be really trendy now. And I could see them, you know, especially the third act of this movie, once they, you know, really start like kind of, they start following the character around and she's like projecting the dream and like all that stuff just seems like it would make for a perfect playground for Freddy.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe he'll show up in the crossover sequel.
We can only hope, for sure.
You never know.
Well, I am going to go with my first piece here, and I'll actually start off with Devs, the TV series from Alex Garland. You got techno horror is going to kind of run through a bunch of these pieces. A lot of the horror that comes from technology and not really understanding what exactly you're getting yourself into as you're letting that technology kind of take the lead and get away from you. And there's even a line in the movie where the one character says, maybe you're seeing something you're not supposed to. And, you know, that line especially tied it back for me to Devs, because the whole idea of this series Devs is that they're kind of creating this, you know, alternate reality that is all of reality. And it's so godlike and so just out of control, powerful, that it really is something that shouldn't happen. And that is kind of where we're going here with Come True, looking into people's dreams in a way that is just probably not healthy. And there's kind of no good end in sight for it.
Yeah, this is definitely not an ethical study.
That's right.
Passing all the standards of academic studies.
Yes.
Or whatever going on here. And yeah, and I think there's the character of the sort of supervisory professor who doesn't really seem to be supervising very well, but he does talk about right? He chastises them for going too far,
right?
Whatever.
That's an interesting thing to bring up, just as like a kind of a tangent. There's this movie, and we'll get into it more, I'm sure, with some of our other pieces and stuff like that. But there are things in this movie that I don't fully understand yet, and like I don't know if maybe I ever would. But I wasn't quite sure where that guy, and like, kind of plays into everything other than just being the overall supervisor of the whole project.
Yeah. I mean, I get the impression that this is, I mean, it's a university, and the main kind of people who are running this study seem to be grad students, maybe.
Right.
And so it's possible it's like, it's their project, but they need a full professor to endorse it in order to make it official or to fund it. I mean, I don't think this is definitely not a movie that is concerned with the bureaucracy of universities.
Sure.
But that's, I feel like that's kind of the structure. So he's in charge nominally, but it's their thing. So he just lets them go and they give him some updates or whatever. And that was why maybe he doesn't realize how off the rails it's gone, and they're conjuring a monster. And that was probably not in their proposal, their grant proposal or whatever.
I don't know why, but if this was a bad movie, I could totally picture it being played by Eric Roberts, that role. He would be perfect for it. But
I feel like I've seen Eric Roberts with those big retro glasses.
Totally.
And something.
Yeah. 100%. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
Well, I'll stick with TV since you mentioned devs, and mention Maniac, the miniseries on Netflix, directed by Cary Fukunaga, which is also about participants in that it's a clinical trial for a medication that helps people with anxiety, depression, and mental illness. It's a sci-fi medication that, you know, it's a magical pill or whatever.
Right.
But what happens in there is the participants in this study are taking these pills and then being hooked up to a machine and then entering into a sort of dream world where they are in an alternate reality and they're all kind of connected to each other. And the two main characters, played by Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, find themselves, their realities are crossing over, their dream worlds cross over, which isn't supposed to happen. And so it's dangerous and stuff. And that is not a horror show, a horror series. It's
sure.
more of a weird, like, romance thing. And the alternate realities are really the chance for them to do all these different genres. So in one, they're in a, like, Lord of the Rings-ish fantasy world. And then they're in this kind of 80s suburban world and various different kinds of things that eventually explore their trauma. And story-wise, it kind of does it. It's very mysterious. And then you figure out what's going on. And it's just, that was it. But it has a cool look. And the other thing that I think is similar is the sort of retro futuristic technology in that the technology here. And I mean, and in Come True, the whatever they're using to look into the people's dreams and connect them together or whatever is obviously something that doesn't exist. But it looks like it's something that the producers probably salvaged, or the production designer salvaged from like a garage sale or whatever.
Right.
And so the combination of this super advanced technology that looks like it was dug up from the 70s, which is not an uncommon thing, I think. And it's also an easy way to create this sense of disconnect and to give you, as a viewer, the idea that like, oh, something's weird, something's off here. But Maniac is full of that, maybe to like an overly excessive degree. It's just like constant stuff everywhere.
Right.
It's a very production designed show, but I make it sound terrible. It's kind of fun, but it certainly has a lot of connections there.
Right on. Yeah. I'm going to bring up something that's not really a puzzle piece because it's too new to be a puzzle piece, but it goes right along with what you were saying there. Another movie that you covered on the show with me, Possessor, from Brandon Cronenberg. They're more of a pairing. That movie and this movie go together so well with a lot of the same kind of techno horror. And like you were just saying about these futuristic things that don't feel futuristic. They just feel so lived in and so like based out of like old technology that's kind of retrofitted to become this futuristic technology. That movie, I think, belongs in this conversation, even though it's probably developed roughly around the same time as this was. But I would also say Brandon Cronenberg's previous film, Antiviral, throw in there with that as well, because that kind of does the same kind of thing with mixing together really futuristic technologies with very old feeling things and making it, it just kind of makes everything feel like it's in this world that's a little bit off from ours.
Right. I haven't seen Antiviral, but I'd like to, because I liked Possessor. But I think that's the main thing, is that when you see that kind of stuff, you immediately know, oh, this is, it's off, right? It's something that's just to the side of our world. Maybe it's the future. Maybe it's the past. Maybe it's both.
Right.
But whatever it is, it's not our world.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll go on to another piece then, and I know a few of my pieces, speaking of Possessor, probably were brought up in our Possessor episode. One, for sure, was Inception, Christopher Nolan's Inception, which this movie, once you get down to it, and like I said earlier, I don't fully understand everything that's going on in the end of this movie, but at some point, it's pretty clear that we are inside dreams that are within dreams, which are within a coma, which are inside dreams. And it, who knows where, you know, what starts and what ends. I mean, I think I kind of have a general gist of what's going on here, but it's a movie that's definitely, I would imagine a lot of thought went into how exactly those levels kind of stack on top of each other. And I'm sure that they do kind of make sense if you feel the need to chase it down that rabbit hole, but it's not necessarily important for the enjoyment of it. It's still an interesting story, regardless if you get every last level out of it.
Yeah, I had Inception on my list as well, which we did talk about, I remember, when we talked about Possessor, but it totally fits. And I think you may be right that Anthony Scott Burns has a very clear sense of when what is real and what is not real and when do we transition there or whatever. But I feel like it's just as possible that he doesn't, and that that's okay, that it doesn't need to be like that. Christopher Nolan is the kind of filmmaker who 100% had a chart for that, for Inception, and you know, every movie that he makes probably, and is so fussy and meticulous, often I think to his detriment, about the like rules and logistics of these sci-fi worlds that he creates. And That can be cool, but I feel like that's just a very different kind of approach than we're getting with this movie. And I mean, I think both are enjoyable. I almost prefer the like, who knows? Like, it's about the mood more than it is about like how everything like fits together perfectly in this sort of lattice or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly allows you the room to, you know, try stuff and get a little more experimental, and if it doesn't all line up, especially on your first viewing, oh well.
Right. Exactly.
So what do you got for your next piece?
Well, my next one is, I feel like, is kind of a similar cousin or whatever to Inception, and that is Tarsem Singh's The Cell, which is about investigating a criminal, and the kind of the cops go into the mind of this disturbed, I guess it's a serial killer. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie.
Yeah, but me too.
It's Vincent D'Onofrio who plays this bad guy, and Jennifer Lopez is going into his mind. And really, that movie, although it does have a lot of the logistical stuff, and I think you can figure it out, and I think at its core, the plot is kind of a basic like police procedural sort of thing. But really, it's just an excuse for Tarsem Singh to create these elaborate, beautiful, like, dreamscapes. It's not dreams per se. It's just meant to be in this guy's mind, but it's very dreamlike and, you know, follows that kind of weird logic or whatever. And unlike Come True, which has this very muted color palette, and it's kind of these like grays and blues, and it's a like lavendery, I think, is the color that we get a lot in the observation room or whatever. But they're all very muted, and The Cell is full of these like bright, bold colors. And that, and I feel like in a weird way, that's not, we think of dream worlds as being dark and murky, and it does the opposite thing. And it's like, no, they're bright and they're loud. And but it's just a movie that's beautiful to look at. But it also, I think, it allows the filmmaker to say, whatever I thought of is here because there's no, it's not a real world and we can just right. do whatever. And I think that's what this movie is allows itself to do as well. So I feel like I may have brought this up also maybe on Possessor.
It's or possible.
Something. And I mean, I feel like I've referenced this movie enough recently that I'm like, I should see it because I haven't seen it since it came out in the theater, which is probably like 20 years ago. But it's so it's still memorable.
I was just thinking the same thing. Like, it's funny. I don't think most people remember The Cell as far as like what the story is and like how, I don't know, the performances or any of that. They just remember, oh, The Cell equals nightmarish visuals, you know? Right. And that definitely has come up on this show, not just in possibly The Possessor, but I'm sure it's come up on other episodes as a puzzle piece as well. And again, I haven't seen it since opening weekend in the theater either. And it's something maybe I'll revisit one of these days because it would be nice to have a little bit of context to what exactly that movie, you know, the rest of it is.
Right. But I do think that, again, it's a movie where what the actual plot was and what they're trying to solve as right. cops or whatever is really not important.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll go right along with using The Cell for its nightmarish visuals, and I will go to a video game that there was a movie for, although I never saw the movie, and from what I hear, it's pretty bad. But it's Silent Hill, which I think as far as these kinds of dream sequences in come true with these like weird, like twisted bodies and everything is just darkness on top of darkness, different grays on grays and maybe a little lavender, as you said earlier. But I don't know, whatever it is. But yeah, no, it's just super dark and super twisted and just weird looking. And the Silent Hill game series definitely had a lot of that kind of imagery. And yeah, Uwe Boll, I don't know if he really brought that over into the movies, but I assume he must have, at least a little bit. But we'll use the video game as the puzzle piece here.
Well, first of all, Uwe Boll did not direct that movie.
Oh, is that not one of his?
No. Okay. I actually have seen that movie. I have not played the video game. I'm not a video game player. Mm. I mean, not since I was like 11. but I've seen that movie, and that movie actually is one of the more acclaimed video game movies.
Okay.
I think there's a sequel, or maybe more than one sequel, like a direct-to-video that I think didn't get that same praise. But I watched the movie because it has a reputation as being one of the better video game movies.
Okay.
And it does have a lot of that nightmarish imagery. I didn't think the movie was really that good. Christophe Gans is the director, a French director, who made that film, and I think was like a huge fan of the game, and it was a big passion project for him. And yeah, it's cool. It's been a little while since I saw it. I think it's one of those movies that starts off with like, again, it's sort of like a mystery, like what's going on? All this weird stuff is happening. And then as it goes on, it explains too much and not enough at the same time, you know?
Right.
It gives you like all this backstory and you're like, well, that doesn't actually tell me why any of this stuff is happening, but you've told me a bunch of stuff.
Right.
So yeah, not great. Probably not as good as the game, but we don't need to give Uwe Boll credit for,
He's
done enough.
I think I was thinking of Alone in the Dark, actually, as far as like, hit, you know, the director is concerned, but definitely Silent Hill, the game, though. All right. So let's move on from that and not speak of Silent Hill anymore. What do you have for next puzzle piece?
So my next pick is It Follows, which is, I feel like a standard, you were talking about this indie horror aesthetic or the kind of art house horror aesthetic. And that's a movie that was at really the sort of top of the heap of that. In that it had a big mainstream success beyond just the genre fans and, you know, became, I think, pretty influential. And I think the aesthetic, which is this kind of muted, subdued look, is certainly in line with It Follows, but also the approach to character where we just get these, it's very low-key and matter-of-fact, and we see kind of the character relationships and their backgrounds without, we don't get explanations. There's no big exposition scenes. I mean, the main character, Julia Sarah Stone's character, I think the character is maybe named Sarah, actually. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, whoever she is, the main yeah. character. I mean, we see her early in the movie and she's sort of quasi homeless. She's sleeping in this park and she sneaks into a house that is maybe her house and maybe her mother is finding her, but then calls a different name. And we never really know what's going on with her other than that you know, she doesn't seem to have anywhere to go to sleep. And so she signs up for this study. But I think that, and the sort of like bland suburban landscape where she lives and where we eventually kind of wander back into, I think there's a lot of that in It Follows. And one other thing is, we mentioned the sort of retro futuristic thing. David Robert Mitchell, and I still haven't seen Under the Silver Lake, which I know you like, but in It Follows and in his previous film, The Myth of the American Sleepover, he does this thing where the movies take place in this kind of out of time period where they feel like maybe it's the past, but then we have a technology that is futuristic. There's that weird clamshell like digital reader thing that characters use. In It Follows. And so I think, as we were saying before, it gives you that immediate sense of like something's off here. You know, this isn't the world that I know. But it does it with that kind of background production design stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I definitely think as far as that whole thing with the way that world feels, that It Follows definitely had that. And another thing with It Follows, might as well give a shout out to the score here, because I mean, one of my favorite aspects have come true. Excellent score, which I guess I didn't realize this until just before we started, but one of the two composers listed, Pilot Priest, is the director, Anthony Scott Burns. So,
I didn't realize that, because I'm familiar with, because there's like, it's like a synth pop duo that
Electric does, Youth.
Is Electric that? Youth, exactly. Yeah. And I had listened to some of their music like forever ago. And I saw that when I watched the movie, I saw it in the credits. And I was like, wait a minute. And I went back to some list I have of like musical artists to check out more of, you know, that always a little note down, because I had heard a couple songs some long time ago and it was like, oh yeah, there they are on that list. So
nice.
I was familiar with them a bit, but not the other, but that's cool. Quite a multi-talented guy then.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll go to another piece here, and I'm going to go with, I'll jump to Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind for a lot of the reasons we've been talking about with this, these kinds of technology things that are explained just enough to kind of get you by, and they don't really need to go into the nooks and crannies of how it all works, because that's really not important. What's important is we could see people's nightmares, and isn't that creepy, you know, and just kind of getting you into that world. I also thought on another level the comparison works, because you've got these multiple tiers of who's in charge of these experiments, which is something we kind of talked about earlier with the Dr. Meyer character being like kind of where the Tom Wilkinson character is. And then you've got the guy who's actually in charge of the experiment, the Jeremy guy. And that would be more, you know, along the lines of like the Elijah Wood, especially with the creepy, you know, eventually getting with the girl, which is not very good. But Mark Ruffalo, at least in Eternal Sunshine, is a pretty stand-up guy. So,
yeah, so many unethical things happening in this study. You definitely should not sleep with your study subject, who may be able to infect you with her nightmares. And that's another thing from It Follows that I forgot to mention, the sort of like infection being passed along of the horror aspect of the story.
Sure. Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense.
Yeah, but these guys should get an F on their project.
Yeah, especially I think they kind of use the fact that she's 18 as like permission, like, no, it's fine, you know?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how old she is. If she's a participant in the study that you're running, you definitely cannot have sex with her.
Exactly. That is something I think hopefully most people watching the movie understand.
Yeah, I think we're meant to. I mean, it's interesting because that character is, I mean, he's sympathetic, but I do think we're meant to see him as like a bit creepy and a bit taking advantage of this vulnerable woman who's not only young, but as we're saying, appears sort of quasi homeless and doesn't have anywhere else to go. And they exploit that and all that stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. Not good. Not good people, but no,
not at all.
Yeah. So what do you got next?
Well, I'll just kind of piggyback on your Eternal Sunshine one and mention another Michel Gondry film, which is The Science of Sleep. That I feel like is underrated. I mean, that came right after Eternal Sunshine, which was so, you know, hugely acclaimed. I mean, and has just become more so, I feel like, in the last, you know, 15 plus years or whatever since it came out. And I feel like Science of Sleep is forgotten a lot.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of similar themes about that sort of blurring between the internal mental world and the outside world. I mean, and literally in that film, it's dreams of the main character played by Gael Garcia Bernal. And that's a more whimsical movie and less sort of head trippy. I mean, presumably in large part because Charlie Kaufman is not involved in the science of sleep. And I feel like, again, he's the one that people are following him. Like, oh, what is he going to do? Not that he doesn't deserve that following, you know, but I feel like he takes so much of the credit for those movies that he made with other directors that were not sort of following them with the same avid interest. And fair enough, because Michel Gondry has been very hit and miss. But the point is, The Science of Sleep is good. And it's very much in this vein of a character not knowing what is real and what is not real in terms of dreams and reality. And is the experience that he's having in a dream, does that translate? I mean, I think we get to a certain point where we mention the Jeremy character, you know, and they're having sex and you wonder, like, are they really, like, is she really hooking up with him? Or maybe she's projecting because she's kind of into him and this has become part of her dream.
Right.
And there's a whole romance in that movie with the Charlotte Gainsbourg's character. And you kind of are like, is this really happening? You know, are they really connecting sort of on this dream world or not? And it's also been a long time since I saw that. But I remember the cool visuals, like we were saying with The Cell, more than the plot details.
Right.
But I think that's a movie that, again, is underrated. And if you like Eternal Sunshine, it's something that you would probably like that one, too.
Yeah, that's a movie I've been wanting to revisit. I haven't seen it since, you know, when it first came out. And I remember it was kind of, like you said, it was in the shadow of Eternal Sunshine and just kind of didn't jump out at me, you know, quite as much. But I did enjoy it at the time and I would love to revisit it. And, you know, as to it as a puzzle piece for Come True, you know, obviously whimsical is, like you said, the right word, I think, to use for The Science of Sleep. And that's not what Come True is, but no. I would like to see, like, maybe, I would have loved to see a version of Come True where maybe we get a little more in the dream sequences, a little more variety, because, you know, dreams can be all kinds of things. And I think that there's a very creative vision here with these dream sequences. I'd have liked to see more different stuff happening in those dreams. It would have been cool.
Yeah, these people only have nightmares exclusively, it seems like.
Exactly. Really dark nightmares. Yeah, yes. It's very true. Yes. Maybe that's what brings them all together in this wacky world.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Who knows? Well, I got one last puzzle piece here. And this is kind of like a little bit of a wishy-washy one here. It's not a particular thing, but it's On Rails video games. So if you don't know what that is, like, follow me along here. That is games like House of the Dead or Time Crisis or Smash VR. A lot of virtual reality games are this way, where it's presented where you're constantly moving forward and you just kind of got to look around at all the stuff around you and either shoot or collect or whatever it is you're doing. And something about the version of the dream world that is being presented in this movie is that you're always constantly moving forward in these dreams. And they're all presented in this kind of first-person point of view that is always, like, pushing forward into the scene, and things are all around the viewer and all kinds of creepy stuff, creepy dark stuff like we've been talking about. And I think it just, it lends two ways in two elements, I would say. First of all, to the kind of, like we've talked about, the techno horror aspect of this, like kind of tying it to technology. I think that's just such a big thing in video games. It kind of almost acts like a shorthand in a way for, you know, for people who have played those kind of games. They understand the idea of being stuck on that track, you know. But also kind of points to, like, the uncontrollable nature of a dream, like, to where, especially a nightmare, where you just kind of can't wake up and you're along for it until you wake up, no matter what. And I think that that's, like, a big part of the fear of nightmares that the movie is, like, really trying to play on.
Yeah, definitely. And I've never played video games like that, and I, you know, so I don't have that experience, but I can see what you're saying in the way he moves the camera in those sequences where it is, it's just constantly moving forward. And it's almost like, you know, from my perspective, it's like being on one of those simulator rides at an amusement park or something, where it's just moving you and you're sitting there and you're going forward no matter what. And you can see something, you know, on the horizon. You're like, no, I don't want to go there, but you have to. So, yep, yes, stuck. I can see that. Yeah.
I'm picturing you just being like, will you please stop this fucking thing? I want to go.
I mean, I like those rides. Usually they're not through like nightmare worlds.
It's That's
like
true.
Star Wars or something. It's a little more fun, but.
I would actually like the nightmare world roller coaster thing. That would be fun.
Yeah, maybe there'll be a come true ride. I don't know if any, maybe at the IFC Films amusement park, have the come true ride.
I want to go to the Vigil one too, where they just lock you in a house with a dead body and a crazy old lady.
Sounds fun.
Oh yeah. All right. You got any other puzzle pieces?
Well, I'll bring up one last one, and that is also related to the Dream World, and what it reminded me of was Tool music videos. And I know you're a big Tool fan also. And Adam Jones from Tool is the guy who makes all their music videos, who directs all of those. And they're all these super creepy dream world kind of things with dark figures and a lot of the sort of, you know, morphing from one to another. And the early Tool videos, a lot of them are like stop motion. Mm-hmm. And but more recently, stuff he's created is CGI, like what they're using in this film. And it just it very much reminded me of that, where it's abstract. It's never like a literal interpretation of the song.
Right.
It's just these unsettling, weird visuals to go along with whatever the music is. And, you know, he has a clear aesthetic that he's just stuck to for the last 25 years, making these music videos. And I like it. But I think much like their music, it's kind of gotten a little calcified. But I think from that perspective, like, you could take one of these dream sequences and set it to a Tool song and it would totally work.
Oh, definitely. Or a music by David Rosensong, possibly. But but yeah, no, I almost was going to include Tool music videos on my list as well. And there's even that moment I brought up at the very beginning of the conversation with the girl with the one eye patch on, kind of reminded me of that one segment. And I think it might have been Stink Fist. I'm not sure which video it is. But there's a moment where the character turns around and it's got like a thing over its eye. And it reminded me of that a little bit. But yeah, I love those videos so much.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, I was kind of ragging on them, but they are really cool. I feel like the more recent ones have gotten, again, a little like he's just noodling around with the same three ideas. But those early ones were amazing, and especially because at the time on MTV, nothing looked like that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You saw that sandwiched, even if you're watching Headbangers Ball, and it's sandwiched in between like a, you know, a Guns N' Roses video and a Metallica video or something. You're like, what is this?
So. Well, I mean, that's another way that, like, you know, traditional or stop motion effects, you know, bring out more creativity than just CGI. Because, yeah, you're right. The more recent stuff has been kind of the same kind of thing over and over again. But back then, those all just seemed so unique and different, even if they were like similar characters and settings.
Right. Yeah. He had the most recent thing I saw was like, it was a sort of a promotional video for a custom guitar that he made, Adam Jones. I don't know if you saw this, and it was accompanied by an instrumental that was essentially like a new Tool song, just with no vocals. And it's like 9 minutes long or whatever. And it just looked like a screensaver, and not in like a positive way.
I'll still watch the long rumored by Tool fans feature length Tool movie music thing, which probably will never happen. I mean, but, you know, I could still dream for it.
Yeah, I'd watch that too. I mean, you know, of course I would.
Yeah. So, yeah,
that sounds. I hadn't heard anything about that. It sounds cool.
That was a thing that we all used to talk about in the early 2000s, but yeah, that's a long time ago. So.
Yes, it is.
Well, the finished puzzle for Come True includes A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, Devs, Maniac, Possessor, and Antiviral, Inception, The Cell, Silent Hill, It Follows, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, The Science of Sleep, On Rails Video Games, and Tool Music Videos. So, Josh, is there any major things we didn't quite get to while going through the puzzle pieces?
Well, I just would want to give a shout out to a movie that I couldn't include because I haven't seen, but I think has a lot of relevance, which is Rodney Asher's film, The Nightmare, the documentary about sleep paralysis that I think sort of reenacts that experience in a horror movie style. And the shadow man figure in this movie is clearly a reference to the figure that people tend to see during sleep paralysis. I mean, that's not something that I've experienced personally, but that's like the common thing that people mention.
I have once, and it was scary as hell. So
yeah, I would imagine. So again, I think maybe you don't want to watch that movie. I don't know. And I haven't seen it, but I've read enough about it to know that that's got to be an influence on this.
I would think so. Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to bring up, and you know, your film history is better than mine, so I don't know, maybe you saw the connection, but any significance to the Weekend at Bernie's and Terminator posters, would you say?
I mean,
Terminator you could kind of see maybe a little clearer.
Sci-fi-y. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, I actually never seen Weekend at Bernie's,
okay. You
know, which is an important part of any film history education, of course.
I'm sure it'll come up on Awesome Movie Year at some point.
Yeah. I mean, we have the climax sort of the movie where she's like sleepwalking and they have to guide her. And I suppose that's almost like carrying along Bernie's corpse. I'm really stretching there.
I think you cracked the case, Josh. I think you did it. That is a perfect place to end this because we figured this movie out for sure.
Okay.
Well, Josh, is there another movie you saw recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Sure. Completely different. I'm going to recommend a movie that I know you've seen, and I think you were not really that into, and most critics seem to have not been into, and I had sort of low expectations because of that, but I really loved, and that is French Exit from Azazel Jacobs. That is, I mean, I don't know, as of when this comes out, probably still just playing in theaters, but will be available on VOD, I imagine, within the next few weeks. And I could understand why some people were not into it. It's kind of excessively quirky in some ways. But it just had this dry, absurdist sense of humor that really, really worked for me. Michelle Pfeiffer is amazing in it as this sort of socialite, New York City socialite, who discovers that her fortune has disappeared and she doesn't know how to live without lots and lots of money. And eventually she moves to Paris to stay in a friend's apartment along with her son, played by Lucas Hedges, and they have this kind of unhealthily close relationship. But it's this, we're talking about whimsical about Michel Gondry. It's this actually quite whimsical, witty comedy about their relationship and about this woman's sort of search for her identity with the lack of money and her husband who had died. And it's got these funny magical realist touches. The husband has been reincarnated as their cat. And just a lot of really entertaining supporting performances. And I mean, I laughed and smiled and was captivated the whole way through. So if people have seen reviews that were not that enthused, I hope they'll give it another look. Again, it'll probably be on VOD fairly soon. So French Exit is my pick.
Yeah, I liked it, I think, a lot more than maybe I let on. And I'm almost tempted to rewatch it and say, hey, let's do an episode on it, because I know that you really loved it. And I think maybe it deserves another shot from me.
I hope so. I mean, from you and from anyone, because like I said, I you know, as we have discussed, whether it qualifies. But for me, this is my favorite movie of 2021 so far. It was not released in 2020, except to critics like you and me who got to see it. So it's at the top of my list at the moment.
Yeah, nothing makes sense anymore, Josh. But
we're in a dream world.
That's right. We sure are. Well, Josh, why don't you tell people what you got going on?
What do I got going on? Well, I got Awesome Movie Year, which is in the thick of, or maybe reaching the end, depending on when this comes out, of our season on the films of 2003. So that's been a lot of fun talking about those movies, including multiple David Rosen favorites. So that's cool. So we got that still going at awesomemovieyear.com and Awesome Movie Year on Facebook and Instagram, and Awesome Movie Pod on Twitter. So check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. My stuff at joshbellhateseverything.com, at joshbellhateseverything on Facebook, and at signalbleed on Twitter. My reviews in all sorts of different places, all kind of collated there, do my best. So check out all that stuff if you want to see me or hear me or read me talking about movies.
All of the above.
Yes.
Even dream you, Josh. Even
dream you. There you go. That's the next frontier. Can I get movie reviews into people's dreams? Then I'll really be, you know, taking things to another level.
We'll all be looking forward to that, Josh.
Yeah.
I'm Christy.
And I'm Jackie.
And we are Killer Fun. We explore the intersection of crime and entertainment every other week.
For as long as people have been communicating, they have been talking about who did what to whom, and is that socially acceptable?
Because the boundaries of society,
crime,
and entertainment have always gone hand in hand.
The more salacious,
or weird,
the better. From books and movies
to television shows and games,
we look at how life and art imitate and inform one another.
And we can't get together and not laugh. So let's face it, there's going to be laughing.
Killer Fun is available anywhere you listen to podcasts. So join us.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Come True with Josh Bell from Awesome Movie Year. If you're not listening to Awesome Movie Year, make sure to go subscribe. If you like what I do here on Piecing It Together, and pretty often I have Josh and his co-host Jason Harris here on Piecing It Together, you should definitely be listening to Awesome Movie Year. They're about to wrap up their 7th season. Well, I should say, by the time this goes up, we'll still have another like 4 or 5 episodes to go of that 7th season. But still, lots of great episodes to check out. All those previous seasons each look at a different year in movies, a different awesome movie year. And lots of great movies that we've talked about over those seasons. So check out Awesome Movie Year wherever you listen to podcasts. And, of course, make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together while you're at it. You can, of course, find us on Apple Podcasts, on Podchaser, on Spotify, which I hear Spotify is starting to really become kind of a market leader in podcasting, and maybe we'll have to renew our push onto the Spotify platform. We're on there, but we need to promote it more. So, yeah, check us out on Spotify. You can also rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, because Spotify does not have reviews yet, but you can do that on Apple Podcasts, and that would be awesome because we love hearing feedback and we love seeing that little number go up where it says how many stars we have. So yeah, give us another 5 stars. We'd appreciate it. You can do that on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget about the Patreon that I mentioned at the top of the show. It's the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And what better piece of music would there be for a movie about a scary, creepy sleep study than a song that was on my first album, the album Echoes in the Dark. It's called If Only Tonight I Could Sleep. There's a really great music video for this song that's available over on my YouTube channel, Music by David Rosen. And it's not a particularly like creepy, dark, evil type song, which you guys know I have a lot of those, but it is dark and dramatic, and I think fits pretty well. So let's go with If Only Tonight I Could Sleep, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming out real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.